Parshas Emor deals, certainly the beginning, and for a good portion of it, in fact, with the special mitzvahs and special status of the Kohanim. Emor el Kohanim. And as we know, the Kohanim, they've got their special area of Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash that is reserved for them. And they also have certain mitzvahs, certain restrictions in terms of who to marry, certain restrictions in terms of who to, the prohibition to come into contact with the deceased, and other matters as well. So they have their additional mitzvahs. And Pasuk Ches of Perek Kaf Aleph yields an interesting further message with regards to these mitzvahs. V'kidashto, says Pasuk Ches. V'kidashto, this is talking to the Jewish people. It's interesting, we would have understood or perhaps imagined that the mitzvahs of the Kohanim belong to the Kohanim. But here, the Pasuk is giving us a mitzvah of the Kohanim that actually belongs to the Jewish people, because you have to sanctify him. Ki eslechem elokecha hu makriv. For he offers the korbanos, and therefore v'kidashto. The question is, how does this translate into practicality? How does one sanctify the Kohen? Last we checked, they were fully sanctified before they arrived in Shul. So what is the practical application of the Kidashto? And the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos on Daf Peches, as quoted by Rashi, says that the Kidashto means not that you bestow sanctity on the Kohen, he's already has his sanctity, but you need to enforce the mitzvos that the Torah mandates for the Kohanim. And when we say you, that presumably it lies in the domain of the Beis Din. And what that means is, if the Kohen wishes to come into contact with the mace, but he's not allowed to, that needs to be enforced. If he wishes to marry someone the Torah does not allow a Kohen to marry, that needs to be enforced. In Rashi's words, v'kidashto al korcho, against his will, as if to say, despite any objections he may have. Now, on the one hand, this has given us a more accessible way of relating to the mitzvah of v'kidashto. It's no longer some abstract idea, sanctify him, and we don't know what that means. It means now very directly to enforce the mitzvahs that apply to him. The question at this stage, however, becomes, why do I need a special teaching from the Torah to tell me that the mitzvahs of the Kohanim are to be enforced? As we know, all mitzvahs are enforceable to the same degree. Anyone who needs to do anything, if he doesn't wish to, or if he wishes to violate something that's not acceptable, then we would stop him from doing that. In a sense, therefore, and the Kohanim, they're more religious than anyone else, or they should be, so I shouldn't seem to need to be told that not only do they have these mitzvahs, but you should enforce the fulfillment of these mitzvahs. Why would I think otherwise, to the end that I then need to be told that the mitzvahs of the Kohanim also are enforceable? And this is a very interesting question. Pardon me?
Specific mitzvahs to enforce.
Yes, right. Special message from the Torah. Pasuk Ches, v'kidashto. This question is addressed actually by a Rishonim. There is a number of collections actually of comments of the Baalei HaTosfos on the Torah. And one of them is entitled Moshev Zakenim. And there, Moshev Zakenim give a very interesting answer to this question. Say the Tosfos, one may have thought that, you know, Kohanim are special. What's special about them? They've got special mitzvos, and they have special privileges, and they have special area of avodah that's reserved for them alone. One may have thought that all of these go together in the sense that a Kohen has the possibility of performing the avodah. With that comes certain additional restrictions and prohibitions. And should the Kohen opt in, which he has the possibility of doing so, then he needs to accept all the accompanying restrictions. But what if a Kohen should say, you know, there's enough other Kohanim, and I don't feel that I necessarily wish to perform the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore I don't need to subscribe to the restrictions and prohibitions that the Torah gave to a Kohen, because I'm not going for the privileges, and therefore I don't wish to be have the other laws that apply to a Kohen. That's a very interesting thought. And that is the notion that the Torah is, in a sense, now countering or preempting by saying, as much as it is, that it's up to the Kohen if he wants to perform the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, but these restrictions are a function of his status as a Kohen, not a function of his activating his privilege to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why the Torah says, V'kidashto, regardless of whether he's interested in doing the Avodah, these prohibitions apply to a Kohen and they're non-negotiable. There is a very interesting, moving on to discuss the mitzvah that applies to a Kohen more in our own experience. And that is the mitzvah of Nesias Kapayim, Birchas Kohanim, or as they call it in English, Duchening. And that's something which we experience on an ongoing basis. And it's only for Kohen, Meshech Kedushon and B'Kedushos Shel Aaron. Interestingly, the source of the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim is not to be found in Toras Kohanim. That is to say, Toras Kohanim, Chumash Vayikra. Chumash Vayikra is devoted entirely to the mitzvahs of Kohanim, and yet Birchas Kohanim is not mentioned there. It's mentioned in Parshas Shmini. It says that Aaron vayivarech es ha'am. So there is an allusion, but the source for the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim is actually in Chumash Bamidbar, of all places, in Parshas Noso, tucked between just before after Nazir and just before the Chanukah Mishkan, we have those three or four psukim of Birchas Kohanim, and that itself is an interesting parshanut question as to why a mitzvah that is unique to the Kohanim is not discussed in the Chumash of the Kohanim, but rather in the Chumash Bamidbar. But be that as it may, Kosavaruchu es b'nei Yisrael, Amor Lahem, one of the 613 mitzvahs, is for the Kohanim to bless the people. And there's an interesting statement of the Yerushalmi in Maseches Ta'anis, which will then give us cause to rethink a number of things that we take for granted about Birchas Kohanim. The Yerushalmi states that the mitzvah of Duchening applies specifically within the context of Avoda, which is very interesting. And again, that's how we experience it, but it's important to note it. When do we have Duchening? We have Duchening in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. It comes at the conclusion of the Avoda of Korbanos. Now, why is that so noteworthy? Because generally speaking, each mitzvah is its own entity. It has its own time, its own space, depending, and isn't necessarily tied to the context of another mitzvah. The Kohanim have a mitzvah to eat Truma. They don't have to do that while they're eating Korbanos. It's a separate thing. They can do it at home. They can do it at dinner time. Yet when it comes to the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim, it exists specifically within the domain of another mitzvah, namely of Korbanos. Now, if that is so, if the context of Birchas Kohanim is exclusively to a setting of Avodah, it raises a very basic question for us, namely, we know when we talk about Avodah, and first and foremost, Avodah refers to the Avodah of Korbanos in the Mishkan, in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, we don't have Korbanos currently. So it sounds like we don't have the context for the mitzvah on a Torah level of Birchas Kohanim, because we don't have Avodah. Now, it is true, and we say that we have another type of Avodah that we have even in our times, namely the Avodah of Tefillah, davening. Shall we say that whereas in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Avodah setting for Birchas Kohanim is the Avodah of Korbanos, and for us, while we don't have Korbanos, the Avodah setting is tefillah. Now, there is no question that practically that's what we do, because the whole duchening begins with the bracha of avoda, which is ritzei. That's when the kohen go up to the duchen, and that's when the whole thing starts. And once again, it's interesting to note that birchas kohen takes place within the context of tefillah, within the chazan's repetition of the Shemona Esrei. Most other mitzvahs do not take place within the chazan's repetition of the Shemona Esrei, because you're doing a mitzvah called davening, and each mitzvah has its time. But we see that we couch the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim in tefillah, because that's avoda for us. The question is, on what level, we must ask, is tefillah considered avoda to the extent that it houses Birchas Kohanim? There is a major discussion, and it's interesting to be acquainted with it, as to whether davening is actually a mitzvah of the 613 mitzvos. It's a bit of a surprising question, because we it's in the Siddur, so we do it. But is tefillah on any level actually a mitzvah of the Torah? And here there is a famous dispute between Rambam and Ramban. It doesn't get bigger than Rambam and Ramban in the Rishonim. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos and in the Mishneh Torah states clearly that davening, on a fundamental level, davening is a Torah mitzvah. The source is interesting, because the source of the mitzvah of davening, according to the Rambam, is in Parshas Mishpatim, where it says, "V'avadat Hashem Elokecha, serve Hashem." Now, says Rambam, that's a little open-ended, and serve Hashem could be anything. It could be everything. And how do we know that it's davening? So there's a further elucidating pasuk, which I believe is well known, from the second parsha of Shema, where it says, "La'avas Hashem lekechem ula'ovdo bechol levavachem," to serve Hashem with your heart. It says the Gemara in Tanis, the very beginning, that Beis Amud Aleph, what's avoda of the heart? What is that? Avoda, ezo hi avoda shebelev. That's davening. And therefore, says Rambam, we see that tefillah is one of the 613 mitzvahs. It's interesting to note, before moving further, that the Rambam adduces two psukim to get us to this conclusion that davening is a Torah mitzvah. You've got firstly the pasuk in Mishpatim, "Va'avadat Hashem lekecha," but we don't know what that means. I mean, that could mean anything. And therefore, you need to qualify it and crystallize it and define it with that second pasuk, "Ula'avda b'chol levavchem," which is tefillah. So the Mefarshim ask, and if you're going to need to get to the second pasuk by the time you're finished anyway, why not just start there? I mean, that's also a pasuk in the Torah. It just goes, cut to the chase, as they say, and bring the pasuk of "Ula'avda b'chol levavchem." You've got everything you need. Why does the Rambam insist on starting with this general sounding pasuk in Mishpatim, which then needs to be qualified? Just go straight to the qualifying pasuk. The answer, says Kesef Mishnah, is very simple. This, Rambam wishes to establish, is a mitzvah. A mitzvah is a command. A command is something that the Torah has commanded you to do. In other words, there are many things that are mentioned in the Torah, but to qualify as a mitzvah of the Torah needs to be mitzaveh. It needs to command you to do it. Otherwise, it would be in an interesting situation where we'd say, it's from the Torah, but it's not a mitzvah from the Torah. And therefore, says Rambam, you've got to start with that pasuk in Mishpatim, which is a command. Ve'avadatas Hashem Elokecha. Now, we don't yet know what that means. Okay, find out what it means. But you can't just suffice with the second mitzvah of ula'avda b'chol levavchem, because that's descriptive in nature. Mishamah tishma'u, if you listen, serving Hashem. But that's not a direct command. And therefore the Rambam needs both of these, and together they give you the mitzvah plus its definition. That's the position of Rambam, that davening on a daily basis is a fulfillment of the mitzvah in the Torah. Now, of course, it doesn't need to be that elaborate on a Torah level. The Rambam himself says, prior to the formulation of the Shemona Esrei, it was really up to each and every person how they wish to daven. They just say words of praise, and then some type of request, and then words of thanks. The davening on a Torah level is very fluid, and it can take just a moment. But at core, it is a Torah mitzvah. This position of Rambam is disputed by Ramban. Ramban has a critical commentary that follows the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, and there he comments on everything that the Rambam says is one of the mitzvahs. Does the Ramban agree? Does he disagree? There are certain things the Rambam says are min haTorah the Ramban disputes, and vice versa. There are certain things the Rambam does not codify as a mitzvah from the Torah, and Ramban says he should have. Famous amongst them is the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam does not mention it in his list of Tariq mitzvahs. It's not one of the 613, says Ramban. It should be. And therefore, Ramban has a very interesting list at the end of the Sefer HaMitzvahs, which he calls the forgotten mitzvahs. Namely, the mitzvahs that the Rambam forgot to put in. But of course, there is conservation of matter here, because all agree the 613 mitzvahs. Which means for every mitzvah you think the Rambam should have put in, there's another mitzvah that he did that you feel he should not have put in. And that gives us the second list of mitzvahs, which is exactly the same number, that I guess we could call the mitzvahs that the Rambam forgot to forget. He put them in and shouldn't have, because and the two then correspond to each other. And therefore Ramban says, disputes Rambam's position, and davening, it's a very worthy thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's very important. But it's not a mitzvah from the Torah. Now, if that's the case, we will be in an interesting situation. Because to remind ourselves, the Yerushalmi has told us that duchening, birchas kohanim, needs, it's a mitzvah from the Torah, but it can only take place within the context of avodah. Now, we don't have the avodah of korbanos, but we do have tefillah. But the question is tefillah recognized as avodah from the Torah? If so, perfect. It can then fill in for korbanos, and you have your avodah base, your avodah setting for duchening. But if not, you don't have a Torah base for the mitzvah. It could be you don't have the wherewithal to fulfill the mitzvah on a Torah level. I mean, that's really the implications of this question. But it's clear from elsewhere in the Yerushalmi, actually, Yerushalmi in Maseches Nazir, that duchening is a mitzvah from the Torah, even nowadays. The Yerushalmi raises an interesting shaila. What if a Kohen is on his way to duchen, and in his way is tuma, which he's meant to avoid? Is he allowed to make himself tomei for purposes of then fulfilling the mitzvah of duchening, employing the concept that we call asei doche lo sase, positive pushes aside a negative. Perhaps his positive mitzvah of duchening pushes aside the negative of not becoming tomei. Without getting into the details of that question, but one thing's very clear. It's clear that we're dealing with the mitzvah of duchening on a Torah level, otherwise it couldn't push aside a Torah prohibition. It's also clear that he's not on his way to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, because no one's going to let him in the door if he's Tomei. He'll be Chayav Karis as soon as he steps into the Beis HaMikdash. Which means clearly he's on his way to Duchen outside of the Beis HaMikdash. But then why is it a Torah mitzvah? Apparently, even outside of the Beis HaMikdash, there's no korbanos, but there's still the Torah mitzvah of Duchening through the vehicle of Tefillah. And therefore, the question comes back... If, as is the opinion of Ramban, tefillah is a derabbanan mitzvah nowadays, how can it serve as the setting as for the deoraisa mitzvah of birchas kohanim? And here, the Sefer Emek Bracha, which is a great presentation of many divrei Torah of the brisk nature, and here he quotes a principle of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. And Reb Chaim Soloveitchik says a very interesting thing. And that is, even though there is a dispute between Rambam and Ramban, and who's going to comment on Rambam, if not Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, even if there's a dispute as to whether tefillah is a commandment from the Torah, because according to Ramban it isn't, all agree that tefillah is recognized as a form of avoda min haTorah. In other words, the Torah is full of people davening, and there's no question that it is a form of avodah. It could be, Ramban is of the opinion, it's not an avodah that the Torah commands. That may well be. But there is no question that if one engages in tefillah, he is for sure involved in avodah in a way that's recognized by the Torah. That then can be the setting for duchening on a Torah level. So it's a very blended situation according to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. It could be that davening is a drabbanon obligation, but it's a Torah fulfillment of the concept of avodah. And therefore, the good news is Birchas Kohanim is min haTorah even now, because whatever your opinion on the obligation of davening, it certainly is an adequate setting avoda-wise for duchening. And this leads us to a question which is perhaps more practical in nature, and there's no clear answer, not to every aspect of this question. For as we know, there are different practices with regards to duchening between those in Eretz Yisrael and those in Chutz La'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael, the minhag is to, the noag is to duchen every day, every morning. In Chutz La'aretz, it isn't, not for Ashkenazim anyway. It is only on Yom Tov, and it's only Musaf on Yom Tov. It's a big event. If a person misses duchening, he's going to have to wait a long time until he hears it again. And it's a bit for the Levim to wash the Kohanim's hands. No one passes up that opportunity. It's a very rare thing. And this restriction of duchening to Musaf on Yom Tov has its roots already in early Ashkenazi Rishonim. And the explanation, which is provided by the Ramah, is fascinating. And that is, says Ramah, duchening needs to be, the bracha of the Kohanim needs to be imparted from a state of joy. And in Chutz La'aretz, no one's really that joyous, not on a day-to-day level, which means that it's only on Yom Tov, when they're the Yom Tov atmosphere, and moreover, it's only Musaf on Yom Tov, when it really reaches its apex, that's when they're able to reach the level of joy that is required for duchening. That's an amazing thing. Part of what the Ramah is saying is that everyone who lives in Israel is happy every day. They're Birchas Kohanim happy every day. It's kedai to remember. Now, that's the explanation of the minhag. However, it is a matter of note that there were certain great personalities who were not resolved to this situation, and they did not feel it was sufficient to avoid duchening every day. It's a Torah mitzvah. And chief among them was the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon sought to reinstate in Vilna duchening every day. And they set a date, and everyone was ready, and it never happened. On the day that the duchening was to be reinstated in Vilna, the Vilna Gaon was arrested by the authorities, and he was imprisoned on libel, and people put the two events together, and it was understood that somehow it's not meant to be. Which means even after he was released, he never revisited the plan, not practically anyway, of duchening. But one of his primary disciples, if not the primary disciple, Reb Chaim Volozhin, took up the challenge again. And a number of years later, he decided that he wants to reinstate duchening. And they set a date. And it never happened. Because the night before duchening was to be reinstated in Volozhin, a fire erupted and it ravaged the town, affected half, if not more, of the houses there. Everything was in complete disarray. And once again, no one could explain it, but it was taken as a sign that it's not appropriate to reinstate it. And therefore, that was the last of the efforts that we had. This is minhagim, and halachas are not normally run this way. And yet, these were the experiences. It doesn't get greater than the Vilna Gaon and Reb Chaim Volozhin. And therefore, the minhag remains in Chutz La'aretz that there's duchening only on Yom Tov at Musaf. Now, so far we have two possibilities. It's either every day in Eretz Yisrael or Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz. There is a third minhag, and it exists in the Galil. Anyone who travels to the north, which people unfortunately are doing these days, but anyone who visits communities in the north will note that the Ashkenazi minhag is to duchen every Shabbos. So it's not every day, but it's also not just on Yom Tov. It's every Shabbos. And again, it's a bit of a mystery as to where that comes from, because it's nishtei and nishtei. But the explanation that is given is that this essentially is a meeting point between in a sense, Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael. And by that we mean the two main groups that came to Eretz Yisrael in the early 1800s, this is before the mass aliyot of later on, but in the early 1800s, were the Talmidim, interestingly, of the Baal Shem Tov and of the Vilna Gaon. So they didn't really meet in Vilna, but they met in Eretz Yisrael, or at least the Talmidim did. And the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon settled in Yerushalayim, largely, and that's why Minhag Yerushalayim is quite distinct, even Ashkenazi Minhag in many respects. It's because the infrastructure was laid by the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon. The Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov settled more in the north, in Tveria and those areas. And therefore, it is understood that this, in a sense, because they were very devoted, shall we say, to the minhagim of the Rebbe and Chutz La'aretz, where the Rebbe is, so then and they have a very keen sense of keeping every aspect of minhag. So they didn't duchen every day, they duchen only on Yom Tov, but they come to Eretz Yisrael, and here it's every day, and therefore almost like as a meeting point between the two, they couldn't bring themselves to relinquish the idea that you keep it for a special occasion, but they're not going to keep it anymore just for Yom Tov, and therefore it's settled on duchening every Shabbos. And that is how things lie. Now, just a final very interesting point with regards to duchening in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. The Gemara states that, as we know, when a person is in shul, it's very important to be in front of the kohanim when they're duchening. It's got to be ponim el ponim. It's got to be face to face. So much so that if a person has the possibility of being in front of the kohanim, but nonetheless somehow he's behind them, you know, he likes the mizrach, he doesn't want to give it up, he doesn't know who's going to take his place, and therefore, if he stays behind the Kohanim, he forfeits the bracha, ad kedei kach, because he has shown that he isn't interested in placing himself where the bracha is directed to, and therefore he can actually forfeit the bracha. And that's why, as we know, when the Kohanim ascend, everyone, whoever can, everyone moves to be in front of them, to be facing them. Okay. So it sounds like you've got to be in front of the Kohanim to receive the bracha, to qualify. However, says the Gemara, there are certain people who, even if they're not in front of the Kohanim, they still receive the bracha. Who are they? Famous expression, Am Shebesodos, people in the fields. That is to say, people in the villages, and they didn't have a shul, and they can't make it to shul every day. So, because they're prevented from getting to shul, and therefore they don't actively place themselves outside, let's say, to stand behind the Kohanim, but rather they're prevented from placing themselves in front of the Kohanim, if it's through no fault of their own, they receive the bracha, they qualify for the bracha. Which means that the bracha from the Kohanim, it goes to those directly in front of them, and to those who aren't in front of them, if by no fault of their own they can't make it to shul. It's for that reason, if a person is still davening, he can't interrupt, if in Shemona Esrei, that is to say, and he's behind the Kohanim, he stays where he is. He's trapped in prayer, in a good way. He's like Am Shebesodos, he's like those people. He can't make his way, he can't move. So it is. The Maharam Chagiz, and this is important for all Kohanim, one of the great Sfardi Gedolim, Rabbeinu Moshe Chagiz, says a fascinating thing. And that is, what have we learned? Who qualifies to receive the blessing? Anyone from the Kohanim, anyone who can't make it to shul in order to place themselves in front of the Kohanim. And therefore doesn't have access to Brachas Kohanim, the bracha of the Kohanim spreads to that person. Says Maram Chagiz, everyone who lives in Chutz La'aretz is in that situation, because they can't place themselves in front of the Kohanim because the minhag is that no one duchens there. So they're in the fields. It is an international Am Shebesodos. It's global. Everywhere outside of Eretz Yisrael, for all Ashkenazim, they're no different than those who were in the fields and couldn't make it. And therefore, says Maram Chagiz, the Kohanim in Eretz Yisrael, when they duchen, they should have in mind that the bracha should extend to all kehilos in Chutz La'aretz who cannot presently be in front of them, like Am Shebesodos. Fascinating chiddush. And a friend of mine, it's already a number of years back, he told me that Rav Moshe Sternbuch, Shalita, when he would travel, as he would occasionally, to Chutz La'aretz, and my friend was a Kohen, he checked in with him before leaving and told him, he said, I'm leaving, I'm going to Chutz La'aretz for the following number of days, I want you to have me in mind when you duchen every day, because I'm going to be in the fields. So that's an interesting perspective with regards to Birchas Kohanim and the various forms that we have it in our time. From here, I'd like to move to a mitzvah, which is actually in Yonah D'Yoma, and that is the mitzvah of counting the Omer. And that's to be found in Perek Kaf Gimel. Perek Kaf Gimel of our Parsha discusses all the Moadim. It's the laning for many Moadim. And in Pasuk Tesvav, we have the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Which states, and it's the pasuk that we quote regularly these days, Usfartem lachem mimachores haShabbos. You shall count for yourselves from the morrow of the Shabbos, from the morrow of the rest day, we'll have to come back to that term, Miyom haviyachem es Omer hatnufa, from the day that you bring the Korban Omer, the Omer that is waved, Sheva Shabbosos Temimos Tihiyena. And that is the mitzvah of counting the Omer. And it's its own mitzvah. It is an independent mitzvah of Taryag, Sfiras HaOmer. The question, once again, and these are important questions as we know, is whether or not counting the Omer is a mitzvah from the Torah in our times as well. Now, why would it not be? Well, the Torah states that the mitzvah is to count from the day that you bring the Omer. Miyom haviyachem es Omer hatnufa. And therefore the question is, what if you don't have the Omer hatnufa? If you don't have the Korban Omer to bring that, so do you have the mitzvah on a Torah level, which is to count from that time? And here too, we have, well, two opinions amongst the authorities. According to almost all authorities, Rishonim and Achronim, counting the Omer in our time is Midrabana. It is not on a full Torah level because they understand that it is tied to the Korban. No Korban, no count. Now, we still count, but that's Midrabana. Notable among those who dispute this is the Rambam. The Rambam famously is of the opinion that counting the Omer is a Torah mitzvah even in our times. And the Shulchan Aruch does not rule like him. Shulchan Aruch rules like most authorities, but the Rambam does is of the opinion that counting the Omer even nowadays is min haTorah. What is the basis of this dispute? I mean, what can we trace it back to? So we need to address two or three lines, relevant lines of the Gemara, and then after that we'll go back to the Pasuk. The Gemara in Maseches Menachos, Daf Samech Vav Amud Aleph, and that's where the Gemara deals with the mitzvahs of Sfiras HaOmer, Daf Samech Vav, Hey and Vav. And the Gemara gives us three statements. Abaye says, it is a mitzvah to count the days, and it's a mitzvah to count the weeks, as we know. Mitzvah lemimni yome, or mitzvah lemimni shavui. It's a mitzvah to count the days and the weeks. Okay, that's Abaye's statement. And indeed, the Gemara goes on to say that the Rabbanon, the scholars in the house of Rav Ashi, they would count the days and the weeks. So far, so good. Abaye said, that's what you should do. The Rabbanan and Rav Ashi's house, that's what they did. So far, so good. Days and weeks. But then the final line of that discussion quotes Amemar. And Amemar would just count the days. He wouldn't count the weeks. Well, why? Abaye just said you have to count both. Why is he only counting one? So Amemar says, because nowadays counting the Omer, Zecher LeMikdash. Meaning it's not the actual mitzvah, clearly, in his opinion. It's not the actual mitzvah. So why do we do it if there's no mitzvah from the Torah? Zecher LeMikdash, because in the Mikdash it's a mitzvah. And there's many things we do, Zecher LeMikdash, as we know, Karech, Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel, and so on and so forth. And therefore, here too, since it is, quote-unquote, only Zecher LeMikdash, so you don't have to do the whole thing. It's enough if you count the days. You got your Zecher LeMikdash. Thus far from the Gemara. Well, we can begin to see how Rambam's opinion comes out. Because we know that the halacha is that you count days and weeks. Abaye said it. The Rabbanan and Rav Ashi, who represent the final word halachically, they would count the days and weeks. But we know that if it's, of the two possibilities, if it's just Zecher LeMikdash, like a Amemar, you just count the days, you don't count both. But if the halacha is you do count both, apparently it's because the halacha understands, the accepted halacha, is that it is not Zecher LeMikdash. If it's Zecher LeMikdash, days is fine. But we count days and weeks, not like a Amemar. Why? Because his position is disputed by the accepted halacha. Namely, it's not Zecher LeMikdash. It's the full Torah mitzvah, and the full Torah mitzvah requires everything, days and weeks. And that is the basis of Rambam's position from the Gemara. Clear? You count days and weeks, it means the full mitzvah is in operation, but on a Torah level. Now, we do need to go back to the Pasuk, because, and again, we're in the realms of Parshanut. Read the Pasuk, and the Pasuk says you count from the day that you bring the Omer, which means it sounds like if you don't have the Omer, the count doesn't begin. How would the Rambam deal with that? How would the Rambam say that regardless of whether there's a Korban Omer, the mitzvah of counting is from the Torah? And there is a stunning explanation of this Pasuk, according to Rambam, from one of the Rosh Hashivas of Volozhin. And his name is Reb Rafal Shapira. Reb Rafal Shapira, the personalities with which we're familiar from Volozhin, the Netziv of Volozhin, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik taught in Volozhin. Who is Reb Rafal Shapira? He's in between them. Because he's the son-in-law of the Netziv and the father-in-law of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. So that's good yichus, both backwards and forwards. And he's his own yichus, Reb Rafal Shapira. And he has a sefer called Torah Rafal. And he says that, again, to be clear, the Pasuk seems to be at odds with Rambam's position. Rambam says it's a mitzvah even if there's no Korban Omer. The Pasuk ties the count to the Korban Omer. How can it be reconciled? Says Reb Rafal Shapira, actually, if you look carefully at the Pasuk, you will see that it actually supports the Rambam. How so? Well, let's do that. Pasuk Tesvav. Usfartem lachem imacharas haShabbos, you shall count for yourselves from the morrow of the Shabbos, from the morrow of the day of rest, miyom haviyachem es omer hatnufa, from the day you bring the omer. Says Reb Rafal Shapira, let's stop already. Because the beginning day of the count has been expressed already in two different ways. Firstly, the Torah said, when do you start counting? Mimacharas haShabbos. And then said, when do you start counting? From when you bring the Omer. But why do I need the Torah to tell me it's when you bring the Omer if it's already told me Mimachas HaShabbos and vice versa? I already know from Pasuk Yud Aleph that the day of bringing the Omer is Mimachas HaShabbos. Pasuk Yud Aleph reads, Ve'inifes HaOmer lefnei Hashem litzonchem, the Kohen shall wave the Omer. Mimachras HaShabbos, Yinifenu HaKohen. He brings the Korban Omer on Machras HaShabbos. So if I've been paying attention in Pasuk Yud Aleph, I know that the day you bring the Korban Omer is Machras HaShabbos. And if I haven't been paying attention, so I should go back to Pasuk Yud Aleph. But I don't need it to be reiterated here in Pasuk Tesvav, because now it's actually wordy. It's redundant. The Torah says you should count from the Machras HaShabbos. That's the day you bring the Omer. I know that. So what to do with this dual presentation? Says Rabbi Fal Shapira, you know, we have a similar situation in Pasuk Yud Dalet. Pasuk Yud Dalet deals with the prohibition against eating chadash from the new crop. Now, when does that become permitted? Chadash. The pasuk states, "V'lechem mikali v'chamel lo tochlu." You shall not eat at etzem ayom hazeh until this very day. Ad aviyachem es korban elokechem, until you bring the korban omer. That is to say, as we know, with the bringing of the korban omer, chadash becomes permitted. But what if you don't have a korban omer? Can you never eat chadash again? So the Gemara itself addresses this question. And the Gemara says, from when can you eat chadash, the new crop? It depends if there's a korban available. If there's a korban, so then that's why you have a phrase which says, ad aviyachem es korban elokechem, until you bring the korban. Chadash is prohibited until you bring the korban. If there's no korban, so then the day itself permits. And that's why the pasuk says, ad etzem ayom hazeh. From the day itself, which is a very interesting situation, because it emerges that the Torah refers to the same day in two different ways relating to two different situations. If you have a korban, it goes from the korban. If not, it goes from the day. Says Rabbi Fal Shapira, now we've seen how the Gemara looks at Pasuk Yud Aleph, about Chadash. So apply the same thing to the following Pasuk Tesvav. Because now when the Torah says Usvatem Lachem and gives you two starting points, number one, a day, Mimrachos HaShabbos, and number two, an event, bringing a korban. Why does the Torah give me two? Because like the preceding pasuk, they reflect two possibilities. If you have the korban, you count from the korban. If you don't, you count from the day. But both situations are included in the pasuk, and that is the basis of Rambam's position that counting the Omer is a Torah mitzvah even in our time. Because in the absence of Miyom Haviachem, we take our cue from the Torah's other expression, Mimachras HaShabbos. Second day of Pesach is Machras HaShabbos, whether you bring the Korban Omer or not. And that is the astounding, in its, once he says it, I mean, it's black and white in front of you, to explain the position of Rambam. Having said that, we shouldn't forget that almost everyone disputes the Rambam's position. But now the question is, but why? And especially coming back to the Gemara, did we not establish that there's a mitzvah to count the days and weeks? Did we not see that a Maimar, who holds that it's just to remember the Mikdash, he just counted the days? So if we count the days and weeks, doesn't it tell us that it's more than remembering the Mikdash? Doesn't that tell us that it's on a Torah level? Isn't that what the Gemara is saying? Says Reb Velvel Soloveitchik, no. Even we, according to most authorities, even we who count the days and weeks, it's still the Rabbanan, it's not yet the Torah mitzvah. So what's the dispute now between everyone in the Gemara and a Maimar? Days and weeks or just days? What's the dispute? They both hold that it's not a Torah mitzvah nowadays. But the dispute is because there's two types of Zecher LaMikdash. There are certain mitzvahs where the overt goal is remembering the Mikdash. So what do you need to do? As much as you need to do to remember the Mikdash. But there's other types of Zecher LaMikdash, where the form that it takes is whatever they did in the Mikdash, that's what we do. That's how you remember the Mikdash. By replicating the mitzvah, by continuing the mitzvah. It's for Zecher LaMikdash purposes, but it takes the form of continuing the mitzvah. For example, Lulav and Esrog, the Arba Minim, on the last 6 days of Sukkot, in our time, is Drabbanan. Only the first day is a mitzvah on the Torah level. Ulkachtem Lachem Bayom HaRishon. But we take Lulav and Esrog all 7 days. Why? Why the final 6 days? In the Beis HaMikdash, there's a mitzvah for all 7 days. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim. But if you're not in the Beis HaMikdash, there's only for 1 day. So why do we do the other 6 days? Zecher LaMikdash. It's very interesting. But it's also interesting, but how do you fulfill that for those final 6 days? in exactly the same way that you fulfill the Torah mitzvah on the first day. Because that's how this mitzvah is Zeichel HaMikdash. You remember what they did in the Mikdash by doing exactly what they did in the Mikdash. Their Arba Minim, this is Arba Minim. No one ever said, listen, last 6 days is Zeichel HaMikdash, you don't need all four. Maybe one is enough, or two, or three. No, without four, it's nothing. Because the mitzvah is to do the mitzvah as they did. For what purpose? Zeichel HaMikdash. And therefore, it's a much finer dispute, according to most authorities. Because everyone agrees in principle that counting the Omer nowadays is not from the Torah. But there's still a dispute. Do you count as they did for Zeichel HaMikdash? Or do you just count as much as you need to count in order to have Zeichel HaMikdash? Okay, those are some of the highlights on this very pertinent question for us. With regards to Sfiras HaOmer, and there are practical ramifications. If Sfiras HaOmer is Drabanan, there's more leeway to be lenient to count in a time which it's not entirely certain whether it's night. All these questions of uncertainty relate to Daraisa and Drabanan. But having discussed the halachic aspects of Sfiras HaOmer, we've got to come back again within the context of Parshanut and ask the question and look at the phrase Mimachras HaShabbos. I mean, it's one of the phrases in the Torah that drew so much attention and became the subject of dispute and was rehashed and resurfaced in many different times in history. Initially from the Tzidokim, the Sadducees, then by Tusim, and then the Karaim, and then the Maskilim later on. I mean, and what's the question? When is Machras HaShabbos? Now we know, and we have our tradition, that the Shabbos here is the first day of Pesach. Now, those who do not subscribe to anything other than the words in front of them as they understand them insisted on saying that Machras HaShabbos is the day after Saturday. Shabbos is Saturday, and therefore Machras HaShabbos is always Sunday. And therefore, in their estimation, the count should always begin on Sunday, which means that Shavuot should always again be on Sunday. And that was a very, very vexed issue. And the Gemara devotes many lines and a daf or so, I think, there in terms of this discussion. And by the time we're finished, we've worked out and it could be proved. And it's there's five or six, I think, different approaches in the Gemara. And then there's others in Rambam and still others in Reb David Tzvi Hoffman and closer to our time. And by the time we're finished, we come to understand that the Torah is in fact referring to the first day of Pesach. But the truth is, we've concluded that part of the discussion, which we didn't go into details, that's its own discussion, but we're only halfway through the discussion. Because it's only half of the job to demonstrate that when the Torah says Shabbos, it means the first day of Pesach. You still have another question waiting for you. Namely, so why'd you call it Shabbos? In other words, I can demonstrate that it is the first day of Pesach, but demonstrating is one thing. But why did you make me demonstrate it? In other words, why did you call it something which seems like it's something else, which I then discover cannot mean something else? But why does it sound like it's that other thing? As if to say, what is the value of calling it Shabbos if it's actually the first day of Pesach? Say mi machras haPesach, and the siyum of the Daf Yomi will be one day earlier. So... And this is now the follow-up question, what Rav Kupperman used to call the two questions, She'elat HaKetzad and She'elat HaMadua. The question of Ketzad, how do you know what the authentic interpretation is? And that's the Gemara's job. And then She'elat HaMadua, so why did the Torah not write in the most direct way, in the most obvious way? Clearly there's another message, and what is that message? And this is a question that the Meshech Chochma addresses no less than six occasions throughout his Perush. And we'll take one that appears in this week's parsha. And he prefaces by introducing the mitzvahs as we know them as being divided into two categories. We call them min adam l'mokom, min adam l'chaver, between man and God, between man and man. He formulates it slightly differently, mitzvahs to connect man with God and mitzvahs to connect people with each other. And as we know, there are examples of each. Tzitzis and tefillin and arba minim and so on and so forth. Those are between the man and God. and other in the makor. But then mitzvahs of tzedakah and kindness and lending money and all of those things, that's been other in the chaveira. There's plenty of examples of each. Interestingly, says Meshech Chochma, these two categories have an association with Shabbos and Yom Tov, respectively. How so? Shabbos, what is it that divides, principally, Shabbos from Yom Tov? There are certain things that are mutter on Yom Tov that are forbidden on Shabbos, like cooking and carrying and those sorts of things. And what do they represent? In other words, why would a person need to cook more? He might need to cook more for other people. Why would he carry? He carries from A to B for other people. In other words, the Torah seems to be limiting, shall we say, or emphasizing that when it comes to Shabbos, cook what you need to cook, and you're at home, and nothing leaves the home, as the Pasuk itself says in Parshas Bishalach about Shabbos. Al yetze ish mimakoma b'yom ha-shvi. It's not a time for being out and about, because it's a time for developing the connection between us and Hashem. It's about Hashem as ruler of the world, and it's a day that's dedicated to that. So Shabbos connects man to Hashem. Yom Tov, all those things are now mutter. You can cook as much as you want, and you can invite as many people, and if more people come, you can cook for them on the day, and if there's people elsewhere, you can bring food to them. It's a very together type of day. And that's why Yom Tov is accompanied by Aliyah Lerega, where people literally all get together. And there is a special mitzvah on Yom Tov to see that other people also have the wherewithal for it, the L'Sameach, as the Pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh. So that's very interesting already, just to take these 2 days, Shabbos and Yom Tov, and to see that they really are associated with Bin Adam LaMakom, to man and God, and Bin Adam LaChaveru. But there is a deeper point, and it is most profound. Namely, that the connection between Jews and other Jews, what we call Bin Adam LaChaveru, where does it come from? It's an interesting question to ponder. Why are Jews connected to each other? We have these two concepts. You have the concept of a connection between man and God, between Yisrael and Hashem, and the connection between Yisrael and each other. But at the end of the day, where does their connection to each other ultimately derive from? It derives from their connection with Hashem. I mean, they are all, in a sense, spokes that come out of that center. They're connected to each other because they share a connection, a special connection to that source. And that's a fascinating statement, because it turns out that the concept of unity and oneness amongst the Jewish people, and in the domain of between man and man, in Adam LaChaveru, it's not as distinct from between man and God as we may have thought. Ultimately, it is based on the connection between man and God. And the truth is, this idea is indicated by the Medrash. The Medrash notes that it compares and contrasts Yaakov's family with Esav's family. Esav, says the Medrash, this is in Vayikra Rabbah, but it's about Pesukim in Bereishis. The Pasuk describes six individuals in Esav's family, and it calls them Nefoshos. Be'esav, Siv, Vayikach Esav, Es Nashav, Es Banav, Es Benosav, his wives, his sons, his daughters, Ves Kol Nafshos Beso, and all the souls of his house, all the people of his house. Uve Yaakov, Shivim Nefesh. With Yaakov, he's accompanied by 70 people. Uksibbo Nefesh Achad. It's all called Nefesh. One soul. Vayikol Nefesh Yotze Yerech Yaakov. Shivim Nefesh. As we say in Haggadah Shapesach, Bishivim Nefesh. How come there's only six elaborated, or specified more correctly, in Esav's case, and they're called Nefoshos, and Yaakov has 70 and they're called Nefesh? Says the Medrash, because Esav's family is all over the place. There's a different deity for each person. His wife's got theirs, and his son's got theirs, his daughter's got theirs. They're drawing their allegiance from completely different places, so they're not really connected to each other. But with Yaakov's family, there's 70 of them, but they're all rooted in the same place, and therefore they're all one. And that tells us that the full meaning of oneness of the Jewish people is about their connection with Hashem. And that brings us to the first of the Yomim Tovim. The first of the first Yom Tov is Pesach. Now in Pesach we have yet to develop, we're in the prenatal stage as a nation. And this is when we emerge, so we are not meaningfully together with each other because we haven't yet formed our connection with Hashem, even though it's a Yom Tov. And that's why the emphasis on our first Pesach, and to a significant degree on all subsequent Pesach, is on connecting with Hashem. That's where the focus is on the Korban Pesach, which is about your relationship solely with Hashem, with a repudiation of any other allegiance. And moreover, we find that there are certain key halachas of Pesach that actually have more in common with Shabbos than they do with Yom Tov. What's the rule on Yom Tov? The rule on Yom Tov is whoever can turn up whenever and you can start cooking for them and they can join in whenever they want. Shabbos? No, it's all got to be organized before. There's no cooking on Shabbos at all. What about Pesach? Does it need to be organized? It does. Because as we know, to eat from a Korban Pesach, which is the focal event of Seder night, to eat from a Korban Pesach, you have to be manui. You have to be registered on that Korban Pesach beforehand. So it's a very interesting middle ground, because on the one hand, it's mutter to cook on Seder night, or in this instance, to roast on Seder night, but only for people that are registered beforehand. From that point of view, we say if it's got to be done beforehand, like Shabbos, Misha Tarach Be'erev Shabbos, Yochel B'Shabbos, so too on Pesach. If you organize before Pesach, so you're in. That's Shabbos. And it's very interesting that for the first Pesach, at least, they were told not to leave home that whole night. Vatem lo tetzu ish mi Pesach beso ad boker. And that has a clear association with that pasuk which would follow about Shabbos. Ayetze ish mi mekomo b'yom haShabbos. It's not a time for being out and about. It's not a time for social. It's not a time for those ben adam lachavero connections, because your ben adam lamokom connection is not set yet. It's starting now. And that is why Pesach, that first day of Pesach, is called Shabbos, because effectively it draws and it has characteristics of Shabbos, because it was the first Yom Tov, and therefore you need to get the Shabbos aspects of the day in place before you can then develop the Yom Tov aspects of the day. And moreover, and this is a further fascinating point, says the Meshech Chochma, and what's that got to do with counting the Omer? I mean, all of this is true about Pesach generally. We never talk about it until it comes to counting the Omer. Because the days of counting the Omer are about taking that connection that is forged and forged anew each year on Seder night, and then building on it, and then allowing it to translate into a meaningful and fundamental connection with those around you. The more connected each person is with Hashem, the more connected they can then be with each other. And that is the goal of the Omer period. You count. And what you're doing is you count. You're building each day on that connection until by the time you're ready to receive the Torah, which from a certain point of view is classic Bin Otam Lamokom. But the Jewish people can only receive the Torah when they're one. And they can only be one on Shavuos if they were at one with Hashem on Pesach night. And fascinatingly, the pasuk in as soon as it concludes talking about Shavuos in our perek, it then almost like gratuitously gives us these other mitzvahs of caring for people. You finish the harvest, leave the corners, leave the edges, leave the forgotten, leave them for people that need. Well, where are those things coming from? Those mitzvahs have been presented in last week's parsha. Why are they repeated again this week? Because this is the type of mitzvah that has its most meaningful fulfillment on Shavuos, if you started the count at Pesach, first checking in with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, developing your connection with Him, that allows you for a full meaningful connection with others, and you'll gladly give whatever it is that they need. And I think this is a completely new perspective on the counting of the Omer, this translation of the God connection to an Israel connection. I'm not sure that we normally associate it with what's going on in the Omer. But perhaps this could explain to us, although it's mystifying, one can never oversimplify, but we know that the students of Rabbi Akiva, famously, when they died during this period, and the Gemara gives the reason, they didn't respect each other. And the question, or one of the many questions is, but why now? I mean, did they respect each other before Pesach and after Shavuos, just not during the weeks of the Omer? Why is this the collecting period? But perhaps based on the Meshech Chachma, one could say that there are heightened expectations of people like Rabbi Akiva's students. Because these are the days of the Omer, and they all checked in with their God connection on Pesach, but then there's a higher expectation and demand that then translate into a people connection. When they said they didn't honor each other sufficiently, that means they didn't translate their connection with Hashem and say, well, other people also have that connection, and therefore maybe I should give them all the more honor. On their level, that was the indictment. As one of the Mefarshim famously says, Rabbi Yosef Nechemia Kornitzer, we call upon Hashem as our Father, Avinu, but one only is fully licensed to call upon Hashem as his Father if he then relates to all the other Jewish people as his brothers and sisters. Because if he's our Father, then the corollary of that is that he has many children, and if he's your Father and those who are children, they're your brothers and sisters. And that's, in a sense, almost like the litmus test. In order to, if it's family is family, but family has siblings also. And these are certainly thoughts always worthwhile, but in light of this major discussion of Meshech Chachma, certainly food for thought for these days. We'll leave it over there.